Hello, welcome to Activation Energy, a podcast where we discuss health, medicine, and social justice. I'm Jenny.
And I'm Rachel, and we are your hosts today. Thank you for tuning in.
Happy Friday. Welcome to this episode where we'll be talking with Dr. Michael Mendoza.
Dr. Mendoza is the Commissioner of Public Health for Monroe County and a Professor of Family Medicine, Public Health Sciences, and Nursing at the University of Rochester School of Medicine. He previously served as Medical Director at Highland Family Medicine for 7 years, and he helped establish the Finger Lakes COVID-19 Vaccine Task Force in the wake of the pandemic last year.
So thank you so much for joining us today. And our first question is, where did the task force start? And now that most individuals in Monroe County are vaccinated, where do you see it heading now?
So thank you, first of all, for having me. I'm excited for our conversation. I look forward to your questions. I think the task force came out of an effort at the state, as you'll recall, in late December, when it was quite clear that the vaccine supply would be very, very limited, at least in the first several months. We needed to have a process, both regionally as well as across the state, to allocate essentially all of these vaccines across a huge population, especially when the supply was so short in the beginning. And we knew also that, even within that first tier of people, so the first tier of people were healthcare workers, first responders, and so forth, even within that group, we had to find a way to make sure that the vaccines were distributed in an equitable fashion. And so the task force was born out of a desire to ensure that equity was always part of the plan. And that task force has evolved into a huge collaboration of a number of stakeholders across our community from all walks of life, all economic and social and demographic variables as best we could, understanding that this would have to be a collaboration and it would not be done within months. And it's turning out now that this process is likely to last at least a year. So this task force is still in effect. We're still working. In fact, we just had our last meeting of it last Thursday, and we had a planning meeting today. So this is still very much in full swing. The work of the task force, really will not be done until we get to the point where vaccines are, the COVID vaccine at least, is fully back in the hands of healthcare. Because that's how all vaccines had been until now, really, in general. And so once we get to that point, and frankly, I don't know when that point will be, because it depends on what happens with this pandemic. But if this pandemic continues as it is, and as we continue to anticipate that this will, the COVID virus, the illness will recede sort of into the background and become like other viral illnesses, we're looking at providing vaccines for this for the, coming years. So this is going to be a process that we're still, very much in the early phases of.
What are some strategies that you and your colleagues have been using now to encourage vaccinations among those who might be reluctant or opposed to getting vaccinated?
Well, so as the effort has been across the entire community. And what I will say is that the hesitant population has changed. It's evolved over the last months. And early on, we had hesitant healthcare workers because they were the only people who were eligible. And so we had people within the healthcare field who were hesitant. And, it depends on who they are and what their reasons are for being hesitant. And that's sort of what we have to adapt to. And, it would have been nice if that had just sort of remained that way the entire time. But, really with every week, especially in the last several months, we've had to, continuously study and interview and listen to those who are hesitant because A, they have different reasons. And B, I think it's fair to assume that just because somebody is hesitant at some point doesn't mean that they're always going to be hesitant. And so not only do we have to understand where they're coming from, understand what their concerns are, but we have to be persistent in some way. I mean, there are going to be people who will not get the vaccine no matter what. And, we actually believe that that's not a very large group of the population. The hesitant group, which, depending on where you look, is still in the 20 to 30% range, is highly variable. And some people are, really worried about the science and they want to understand the science better. Some people are feeling like the vaccine was rushed. And the reality is it did come out very quickly, but that no steps in the science were skipped. Then there are issues around trust, particularly around communities of color who traditionally have had a reason to feel that they should not trust the healthcare field because the healthcare field hasn't done its best to be trustworthy. We have significant issues in that population. And so we are working with them. We have what we are calling ambassadors who are going door to door, literally, to talk to individuals and reassure them that this is not an experiment. This is not something that we're trying to pull a fast one over people. We're in this really just to try to help people. And then there's the political part of this. And unfortunately, this vaccine has become politicized. And unfortunately, there's just no role for that because it shouldn't have been that way. This is science. This is healthcare. This is public health. And, you know, that it had become politicized is really probably the most unfortunate feature of this entire thing. We have people who are getting information from sources that are not valid. And it's unfortunate because, you know, from my standpoint, if somebody makes an informed choice with information from valid choices and they make a choice that I may not agree with, that's the way it is. I mean, I make recommendations all the time to my patients and they may or may not agree, they may or may not be able to follow through. But if they have the right information and we've done everything we can to support them, that's just the way it is. But my worry is that a lot of people are making uninformed decisions. They're making decisions with information that's wrong, that is coming from the Facebook section of, the comments section of Facebook. And that's generally not a good place to get information. Some news sources are not necessarily always valid. And so, you know, my duty to the public is to educate and provide clear information that's based on science. And I think a lot of people are not making a decision that's based on evidence or science. And that is where it's particularly unfortunate.
You mentioned ambassadors going door to door. So how do we go about like combating that misinformation, especially when there's so much noise about the pandemic on social media and everywhere you look, really?
Yeah, it's not unlike anything else that we do in public health. It's communication, it's education, and communication's generally speaking the most difficult part of any relationship, whether it's individuals or huge swaths of society. Communication means understanding, it means trust, it means connection, it means safety, it means convenience, all these things. And I think for those who are hesitant, everybody has a different preference, if you will, for what will make the conversation safer or more clear or more educational. So the ambassadors tend to be people who are like the people that they are trying to influence, the people they're trying to persuade. Asian American individuals who are reaching out to Asian American residents and Black or Latino residents who are reaching out to the populations that they can represent. And it's not to say that you couldn't have, a white individual, influencing another race or ethnicity, but in general, it tends to be the people who can see themselves and the person who's providing education can tend to be more safe. But, we're not above trying to, incentivize people. And you're aware that we are providing incentives. The state is providing incentives. Many community-based organizations are providing incentives because that is what is moving the needle. And, when you think through the ethics, if you will, of that, we are spending a lot of money no matter how you look at it. And if I have a team of people, of 15 people going out to provide vaccine for free, it's not as though it's free. It still costs my department all of the time and effort of those individuals and the opportunity cost of them being there. What are they not doing because they're there? Frankly, it's easier to pay somebody $25 to get the shot without any effort than it would be to set up a huge clinic because these are expenses that are just part of the game. We've got to do it. We've got to get people vaccinated because none of this pandemic is going to be over until we're vaccinated or immunized. So that's where we are with respect to the incentives.
So then kind of going off of that, even though there are a lot of these incentives, I think people are generally just getting fatigued of the virus and of having to stay inside and social distance. And as cases are rising again and masks are becoming required again in many areas across the country, what should we be keeping in mind when motivating individuals to continue to comply to these public health standards?
Well, this is the hardest thing. I mean, I'll be the first to tell you I'm sick of COVID too. But the reality is that it doesn't matter whether I'm sick of it or not. We've got to keep working on it because this pandemic is not sick of us. And to remember that this is a global phenomenon. And, you know, even if we can put a lid on it, if you will, here in the United States, it really doesn't matter because the entire globe is in this together. And this is an issue of global equity and global public health. So, yes, I can empathize with that sentiment that I wish this was over again. All I can say is that I would like to get through it as quickly and as safely as possible. And we can do that by working together, by remembering that we're all in this together, that at the end of the day, even though we're, you know, being divisive about this or that, we've got to find a way to reconcile these differences because, you know, we're not all through this until everybody's through it. And if there's a group of our population who is not, then we're not going to get through this. And, you know, at some point, we've got to bring everybody into the fold. And what I don't want to see is people dying. You know, the people who are dying now are people who are unvaccinated. And it's unfortunate because we hear all these stories from people who are in the hospital and family members of those who we have lost who said, I wish my grandmother would have just gotten the vaccine now. I regret that she didn't get the vaccine. I regret that I didn't get the vaccine from people who are in the hospital who are fighting for their lives. You know, it's unfortunate. You know, every hospitalization that we are seeing that's getting to be very advanced in the hospital, we all think of as being preventable. You know, that's not to say that vaccinated people don't get hospitalized. They do, but they don't die and they don't get very ill like those who are unvaccinated. So every bit of improvement that we can get from the vaccine, you know, it's, and when we're on the front lines, when I'm in the hospital taking care of my patients, you know, I'd like to think that what we are dealing with is what we had to deal with. But if I know that somebody didn't get their vaccine and could have been better off, and I'm sitting here managing a critically ill person in the hospital, it's unfortunate because these people's lives and livelihood are at stake, and ultimately everybody's is. Because unlike a lot of medical concerns, you could argue that, you know, if you don't wear your seatbelt, you're probably only putting yourself at risk. But if you don't get the vaccine, you don't wear your mask, you put other people at risk. And that's why the notion of my body, my choice doesn't work here. You know, people are saying, well, you can't have it both ways. Well, the reality is, you know, abortion and other things where you might invoke the my body, my choice dictum don't tend to revolve around matters of public health. And so it's a very odd phenomenon because, you know, public health is run, generally speaking, by the government. And people say, well, we ought to have a vote as to whether the vaccine should be mandated or not. Well, my response to that is you don't vote on the speed limit on the street outside your house. The government decides that because there's a generally acceptable rule for what's too fast on a certain type of road. If we had voting for every speed limit in the county, we wouldn't have order. And, you know, there is some level of centralization that has to happen around a public health crisis because that is the reason why health departments exist. So that's where we are right now. It's tough, but we've got to keep going because the pandemic is not tired of us.
Obviously, it's very difficult to predict where things will go, but is there a specific number that you think we need to hit at which point the pandemic will, like you said earlier, become like, or I guess vaccines will again become like part of normal healthcare? Or?
Yeah. We had hoped that 75 to 80% would be that number. And that number is derived from experience with other vaccines and the calculations and the observations that we've gathered about the contagiousness, the transmissibility of COVID-19. But the Delta variant has thrown that for a loop because it is twice as contagious. And so there's no reason to think that original projections would hold in the face of a virus that's twice as contagious. So the reality is that we don't know because it depends on a number of factors. That number of, quote, herd immunity depends on the effectiveness of the vaccine. You know, there is actually a difference between vaccination and immunization. Just because you're vaccinated doesn't necessarily mean you're immunized because there are some people who will still get sick even though they are vaccinated. So, but when we think of herd immunity, you know, we've got to get to the point where we've got an effective enough vaccine that's deployed over enough of the population and we don't see these variants. These variants throw a wrench into every vaccination that is provided. You know, so far, it appears that the available vaccines are effective at producing fewer deaths and fewer hospitalizations against all of the variants. Do they prevent all infections? No, no vaccine ever is. And this vaccine is, you know, at least twice as good as the flu shot that we get every year. And know, that's not 100% uptake either, but this is certainly a lot more effective than the flu shot. So we don't have a number. Long story short is that we don't have a number yet. We've got to continuously reevaluate the data and see where we're going with regard to our numbers locally, regionally, and, you know, nationally, and then compare that against the variants that are emerging around the globe. You know, the Delta variant hit India very, very hard. And, you know, there's really no reason to think that the variants that happen elsewhere are not somewhere, you know, at some level going to make it here. You know, the question is, do we have enough lead time and do we have enough of a built up herd immunity to fight against it? But clearly we were not prepared for Delta. And so my hope is to get more people vaccinated so we're protected against the next one, because the next one's inevitable. It's not a matter of if, but when.
Would you say in general that possibly there will be an end in the sometime near future?
I wish I could say that. The reality is I don't know. You know, we are taking this a day at a time, a week at a time, a month at a time. But, you know, is the end near? Honestly, I would be surprised if it is, because our vaccine numbers are not yet there. We are losing still too many people. The numbers are not going down right now. I mean, I'm hopeful that they're holding steady, but I'm not even ready to make that conclusion because we've only seen 3 or 4 days of the numbers not rising like they were early last week. So, you know, I'm very cautious. I hesitate to proclaim anything before I see the science behind it. And even then, you know, we're often surprised. So all I can offer is that we're in this together and we've got to adopt the same mentality that people had in the 1940s and 50s when polio was an issue and when people lined up, no questions asked, because the feeling was public health was paramount and we didn't want our kids and loved ones to succumb to polio. We don't have that same level of community spirit, if you will, anymore. And so we've got to find new ways to get this vaccine out, because our lives and livelihood depend on it.
Thank you so much to Dr. Mendoza. As the pandemic drags on, it's evident that we need to be critical in choosing what information comes from a reliable source and take as truth. It is clearly of paramount importance that we think about our own actions and how they impact others. Thank you for joining us today. For more like this, please subscribe, and you can find us on Instagram and Twitter.